Joining us today on the reverse stick is Jay Hardiman from the Hockey Dreams Foundation, a Dutch-based program that runs a lot of really great programs in Africa. And if you follow us on social media, you might have seen us posting some of the great videos that have been coming out of countries like Zambia. So welcome to the show, Jay.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, we're doing well. I'm really pleased to finally get the opportunity to have a chat with you about the Hockey Dreams Foundation and the work that you do. So could you tell us a bit about it, please?
My pleasure to be on the show. Always nice to talk about the foundation. We've been active for about 5 years. It was 5 years ago that the Dutch Hockey Association asked me to go to Zambia to coach some development coaches. They just put the first pitch in on a International Olympic Committee sports facility called the Olympic Youth Development Center. And there was no knowledge at all. So the Dutch Hockey Association pitched in and sent some people who taught coaches how to be a coach. And I was the last one of that. And I worked there for about 6 months and trained coaches and worked a little bit on the club structure. And when I was about to leave, I realized that if I go now and I don't do anything, the whole thing will collapse. And I've basically done my work here for nothing, because there was one container of equipment, there was no vision on where to go, there was no new container coming in, there was no money for education to coaches. So I decided to start a foundation and to raise money to hire the coaches, basically, and take it from there. And that got out of hand a bit. So we actually run an office now in Amsterdam, and we're still a small organization, lots of volunteers, and but we're very, I think you guys say, vibrant. So there's a lot going on, there's a lot of opportunities. We've moved from Zambia to Malawi as well, and Uganda, and we did a little bit of stuff in South Africa, supporting some projects in other countries. So hopefully in 5 or 10 years time we'll be globally supporting development hockey programs.
So I'll take you back to the start a little bit, Jay. How do you what's your pathway in hockey, and what took you towards this role for Dutch hockey?
Me personally?
Yeah.
My personal history in hockey.
Yeah. We'd love to hear everybody's that comes on the show.
Yeah, okay, well, I'll try and keep it short. I wasn't a star, and I wasn't a bad player. I was somewhere in between. And so I never got selected in any of the national teams. I did play in the Hoofdklasse, in the highest league in Holland, for one season, mainly as a bench player. But I've always been interested in international ventures. So when this opportunity came up, I took it, and before I was able to play internationally for the Netherlands Antilles, which was a colony. So I played the Pan Am Games and the Caribbean Games. We actually won a bronze medal in the Caribbean Games.
Fantastic.
So it's a very small island in the Caribbean, and they decided, hey, we actually, within the kingdom, we've got two Olympic committees, so we can start our own international hockey team. And I never set foot on the island and became an international player. So,
well, how many times did you play for them?
11 caps, and we went to the Caribbean Games and to the Pan Am Games. So we played a lot of the Pan Am regions, so Trinidad and Tobago, Cuba, the USA, Canada, and some other smaller countries. And it was basically just a lot of fun. Large group of guys wanting to have an international experience, and we did okay, but there was no real stuff to really progress to the top of the world or something. So, and now actually the country doesn't exist anymore. So,
you're not taking any blame for that, are you?
No. The Antilles had a reform of their structure, and so the status that they had changed, and that's how the Olympic Committee was I recall it. It had to disappear. So there's no Olympic Committee anymore for the Netherlands and Tunisia. So I'm an ex-international player of a country that doesn't exist.
Wonderful stuff. So yeah. The Hockey Dreams Foundation, that takes you, like you say, in Zambia, in Malawi, in Uganda. What does it look like on the ground for the programs that you're putting into place?
Well, we basically hook up with an existing structure. So when I was sent to Zambia, there was an existing something, and I just progressed with that. And we tried to create a local group of coaches. So we tried to select one or three coaches, and then we grow into a group of 10. And they run the programs. All we do is give them a handout on what we kind of expect. So, but we put a lot of the responsibilities with the local community. And so in Zambia, our coaches, they all have their own project. So they have to find a group of kids that they can train. So they either go into a compound school and they ask if they can do weekly PE sessions with hockey. Or they gather up a group of compound kids and they train them on a grass pitch somewhere. Then next to that, we, from the organization here, we start off some communal programs, which is the hockey camps. We do in cooperation with Squadways Hockey Camps in Holland. And so they organize these three-day hockey camps for kids. The kids can join for free. And for about 2 or 3 days, they get hockey all during the day. They get food, which most of the kids, they don't get food every day. So they start the day with food. Then they have hockey. They have fun. And we try to integrate some social skills like gender equality, how do you treat girls or boys, or how do you work together, or other stuff like hygiene. We try to explain to kids that they can get sick if they don't wash their hands. And when I say we, I mean the coaches there, because we are in Holland. We're 10,000 kilometers away. We don't run the programs. Our coaches do that. And then all the coaches have to go to school. So whenever we start with a coach, we determine where they are in their school careers. Most of them are school dropouts. And we make sure that they're back on track for school, because basically they have the right to be in the program until they've finished an education that they can get a profession with, so they can find a job. So most coaches join us before grade 12, which is, I don't know your system, but I think you guys have the same system, right?
Yeah,
so it's completely different to the Dutch system. But yeah, so at grade, so they have to pass grade 12. And recently we just changed our structure where when a coach passes grade 12, they have to write a request for the next step, for basically their master, we call it now. Is that we invest in them, in their, how do you call the education after grade 12?
Tertiary.
So you learn a profession.
University.
What's that?
Tertiary.
Tertiary. Okay, so they get they have the opportunity to get a tertiary education, which we've got two girls that are in a catering school. So it's a 3-year catering education. So when they finish, they can find a job in a hotel. We've got one guy that wants to become a PE teacher, and then most of our coaches are still under grade 12. So hope that answers your question. So the coaches run all of these programs to basically target kids from the compounds. So the coaches are from the compounds, the kids are from the compounds. Together they create a hockey community. So they're stuck together by the same passion as we in Holland have, the hockey passion. And for the coaches, it can change their lives because they can find their way out of the compounds maybe. And for the kids, they get in touch with a sport instead of maybe drugs or alcohol or other mischief on the streets, because there's no after school programs or anything. And they learn from role models, which are coaches. So basically that's what we do.
Jay, did you have any experience with Africa prior to you taking on this role? Did you have any interest in it, or was it just something you went, I'll have a crack at that?
Yes and no. I was, I had never been in Africa until 2010, and which when I drove from Amsterdam to Cape Town.
Oh, wow.
And I'm a writer and photographer, and I do a lot of travel stories. So I was actually doing an intern for a newspaper, and they wanted a reporter on a trip called the Dutch, the Orange Trophy, and they drove from Holland with 20 orange vehicles to the World Cup in South Africa. And I was on that trip. So we traveled through 17 countries in about 10 weeks to Johannesburg and watched the World Cup soccer. And then half a year later, I was working as a ski teacher in Austria, something completely different. And I got a phone call from somebody who knew me and said, we're looking for somebody who knows something about hockey, who knows something about Africa, and who's interested in sport and development. And I just recently finished my minor sport and development. So that all kind of fitted in. And I thought, hey, what the heck, why not? So it looks like a nice job. So that's how I got into Africa. And since then, I have been there many, many times in many different countries. I've lived in Zambia, I've lived in South Africa, and I've traveled a lot of the African countries since then. Lovely continent.
So it wasn't a shock seeing a grass hockey field then?
In Zambia, there's an artificial pitch. Not sure how long it will last, because it's about 7 years old now. In Malawi, there's no artificial pitch. In Uganda, there's one. But lots of the hockey is on grass, which obviously makes it a bit of a problem every now and then, because you can't really do all the new skills and techniques and everything. But again, that's not really our main concern. Our main concern is to get lots of kids together who join in on fun and sports, and to get a lot of coaches that get on track on a pathway to a better future.
So how many kids do you think you've got involved at the moment? And, you know, looking forward to, say, 5 years down the track, how many would you like to have involved then?
Let me see, I've got our annual report here. If you want to read more, our annual report is in English for the first time. It's on our website. According to this, we have number of kids participating in kids' clinics every week is 534 in Zambia, 225 in Malawi, and 80 in Uganda. Uganda is going to probably go 10 times as much next year, we hope. And then the number of kids that participated in our hockey camps is 730 in Zambia last year, 580 in Malawi, and 150 in Uganda. So the numbers is, I don't know, what do you think? Is it a lot, or is it less than expected?
Not less than expected at all. That sounds really good. What do you need to build that, you know, make it, instead of 1,300 kids in the camps, 13,000 kids in 5 years' time? What resources do you need, and how can the hockey community help you with it?
We need bitcoins, I think. or plain old money should work as well. Now, basically, it's simple. We run an organization here, and if you want to look at the exact figures, you can find them on our website on our turnover, etc. But a hockey camp for 150 kids for 3 days, including food, hockey, coaching, and organization, costs around 500 euros. So about 500 US dollar. I don't know how much that is to the Aussie dollar, but so that's the amount of cost that is for a 3 day camp. For us to run a group of about 40 kids that get hockey twice a week for an hour, hour and a half, will be about 10 euros a month. So then we can hire a coach who can start doing that. So that is the exact cost of measuring impact, which is obviously the organization costs more. We run an office here and we have to send people there every now and then. We have our the overhead costs.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to do now is we're trying to get grant, because the structure of the organization is set now. We kind of know how much it costs here. And so basically it's easier to spend money that comes in on directly into programs, because we don't need to have that much overhead anymore. I don't think we have that much overhead anyway, but so if we want to grow it, we need money to perform the programs, and we need time, people's time. I don't know about Australia, but in Holland it's harder and harder to find volunteers.
Yeah, same the world.
Same over there.
Yeah, same everywhere.
Yeah. So, but we've been running this for 5 years, and I did the first 2.5 years. And then I moved to South Africa for 6 months, and my former internship, Sebastian, he took over and he ran it for about 2 years. And 6 months ago, we sat together again, and I was involved as an advisor more and a protector of the idea. And so we sat together and we decided to do a couple of grant requests, which were... Well, we're waiting for one big one to fall. And we rounded up about 10 new volunteers, and we gave a presentation hoping that everyone would say, hey, I can take something up. And to our astonishment, about, I think 7 or 8 out of those 10 decided to get on board. So we have a whole new team of people now, and, which is awesome. So we have a lot of people that are now investing their time into people that they've never met 10,000 kilometers away, which is quite exciting. So the organization here in Holland is growing pretty good. It's very exciting to see what we can achieve next year. We just received our first major donor, somebody who gives us quite a large amount of money every month, which makes it easier to grow. Because we got to watch out that we don't set out things and then after a couple of months don't have the time to monitor them anymore. Because if we put something out there, we need to be sure that it can run for at least 2 or 3 years. Because we're training the coaches locally how to do it. And the coaches get paid some money to do those programs, and if then 6 months later we don't have that money anymore, it was basically for nothing. I think we call it a white elephant.
Sustainability is very important with it, isn't it?
We've invested a lot of time and energy into making sure that the organization is very strong and very trustworthy. If you look at our website, and if you look at our annual reports, we've put a lot of attention into it. We really want to show people that we're really taking care of their money, and we're really taking care of that the people that we develop. We're not looking at numbers only. There's a lot of charities that are just wanting to show large numbers. So if you give us this much money, we can reach that many kids. I get more pride out of coming back every year and seeing the same kids at those programs, and that we now have 2 or 3 coaches in the Zambian program that started out as a kid a few years back. So to us, that's very important.
Yeah, I'm sure that must be one of the great things, is to see those positive outcomes, and what a wonderful experience.
We just published the story of Miss Macau. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yes, that's a very recent lady on Facebook, yes.
Yeah, so we've got 2 more of those stories. So with Miss Macau, it's awesome. She was She's the oldest coach we have. Most of them are around 20, and she's in her 30s. She was unable to read or write when she started with us, but she was a fantastic, she still is a fantastic woman. She's like the mother to the whole group, and she takes care of all the little kids, and when there's problems within the group, she handles those. And so it's very cool to see that she now is able to read or write. She comes up with a plan. She wants to ask for a microcredit with us so she can buy a laptop and that she can progress in that educational area. And we've got a couple of those stories. We've got one coach who's Samuel. He's a fantastic hockey player. And he was like in a gap year due to the educational system. He couldn't progress in his school. And so we invited him to Holland for 3 months. So every year we invite coaches to Holland for their Hockey Dream program, which is 1 month. And they work with Sportways. They learn how to run camps in Amsterdam. They train with a local club, and then they go back and share their knowledge. So for this guy, we decided to bring him over 3 months. And he was a hockey coach at Hockey Club Amsterdam, which is one of the largest hockey clubs in the world, I think.
Yeah.
And he was so successful that the parents of the teams that he coached wanted to raise money for him to come back after the winter break. Because obviously there's the 90-day visa thing between Africa and Holland. He didn't want to come back because of his family, but that said something about his skill. And then he was coaching at a local tournament in Lusaka. And you have to understand, these guys, they live in houses where they, much of the time, they don't have electricity or running water, or at the moment there's a cholera outbreak, so everyone's grounded in their houses. So it's proper compound stuff. It's very poor. And so this guy is coaching at a tournament where all the rich schools from Lusaka or even Zambia are present. And those are schools that charge $3,000 US per term. Wow. So that's a large difference.
Yeah, a real divide.
And these compound kids, they kick the asses off those rich kids. And then what happens is, The CEO or president of the school?
Yeah, principal.
The principal is there, and he looks at the Samuel, and he says two things to his other coach. He says, "Who's that guy? And I want him." So now, he got a job at that school. They are going to pay for his PE teaching, school. He's around 20, 21. He's only finished grade 12. He now has a job where he's going to earn $500 a month. And we are sorted. We are very happy to say goodbye to the best coach that we've got.
Yeah.
Because he did exactly what we were hoping to achieve.
That's it. And what a great example then to show to all that follows.
Exactly.
Yeah, really good stuff. Well, it sounds fantastic, Jay, and just, yeah, positive outcomes is for hockey projects such as this, put a big smile on our face. And if people want to find out about the program, they can go to hockeydreams.nl. They can find you on social media as well.
We are very active on Instagram, and we obviously have a Facebook page, and then our website, hockeydreams.nl. And if you want to support us, there's a donor button on the page. We organize an event every year. It's called the African Hockey Experience. And we've got a website for that. It's called AfricanHockeyExperience.com. And it's basically, it's a fundraising event where you join us on a trip to, this year it's still Zambia. We go on a trip. You see for yourself what we do, you experience, and you join in on programs, you meet the coaches, you'll eat with them at their houses, they'll show you around through the compounds, you'll see a little bit of Zambia as well, the Victoria Falls and some safaris, and everyone who joins in pays an entry fee, and they raise 1,500 euros for the foundation, So that's part of how we get our funds done, and we get to connect people from different hockey cultures. So if people want to join in on that, that's also possible.
That's a great idea, and we'll certainly share the links for both of those pages up there.
Yeah, we're just looking at the webpage now for that. Looks like a fantastic trip.
It is. You guys want to join?
I'd love to. No, we'll have to count the beans for that one.
I have no idea what that is.
I might have to let the have a look in the wallet and see how thick it's going.
Ah, okay. Oh, those beans. Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, we use money to pay. So.
That's fantastic, Joe. Well, look, thank you so much for joining us today, and we wish you all the best with the Hockey Dreams Foundation, whatever your role and capacity is. You know, hopefully it all just flutters away beyond you, and you're long forgotten, and it continues on long into the future.
Yeah, that's the idea. That's the idea. We're seriously hoping, and I really believe that we can join the. We don't want to be super large, but we want to make an impact for our sports, the sport that gave me a lot, and that we can do that around the world in developing countries, because hockey is such a nice game, and it should be played in more countries, and this way it can contribute to a lot of people's lives as well.
Yeah, we were certainly saddened when Zambia didn't make the African Cup of Nations this year, and we talked about that quite a lot on the podcast, and felt we could have done a bit more as a hockey world to have made a difference there.
Yeah, but yes, true, and but that's also the development stage, unfortunately, where Africa is in, I'm not sure exactly what happened. I tried to stay away a little bit from politics, but it was a political issue as well, and it was very sad. It was extremely sad for the players, because they had been dreaming that it would happen. They had been believing that they were going to Egypt and finally play the larger countries of the continent, and they've been training really, really hard. You wouldn't believe how hard these guys train. And that was really sad. And I'm hoping that will never happen again.
Well, look, you know, as you build a base of players there, and clubs get bigger and stronger, and suddenly those support networks come into play, don't they? And maybe they can let the authorities know a little bit more about the quality of hockey within the region, and they might fund it.
Exactly, and we're hoping to train the authorities of the future, so they'll be coming from a very different perspective than what's currently happening.
Yeah.
So we'll, in due time. I'm not saying Zambia will become the next Olympic champion, but I will hope that they will, together with a lot of those nations, that they'll find their place in the international play field, which is also good for the larger, like Egypt and South Africa, who've been playing the final for the last 20 years, I think. So it's good if the whole continent plays. Well, you guys always play New Zealand, probably.
Yes.
Yeah, same thing.
Yeah. That must be a boring game by now.
Well, the main side of things, the Australians have never lost.
Okay, yeah.
They've never been. In one of those games, like a Confederations Cup, they've won every one.
Yeah, it's a bigger issue, the relevance of the Oceania Cup, though, and it's a very different competition to the African Cup.
Mm-hmm.
But the same applies.
Yeah. Well, it would be good for Australia to lose to New Zealand once.
No, don't say that here.
I know, but they'll come back stronger.
Is that right? Now, New Zealand quite often push Australia and do get the odd win, but when it comes to the games in the big tournaments, then the Kookaburras, mm-hmm. I'm talking on the men's side, on the women's side it's different.
Unless you're talking 1976 Montreal Olympics, where we got beaten in the semi-final by New Zealand, he's still smarting over that.
He's going way, way back, Jack.
Australia and New Zealand have a very interesting relationship, Jay.
Mm-hmm. What's that?
Well... We like not liking each other if in a funny sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, it's very, very brotherly.
No, I understand. I lived in Christchurch in 2007, so I know a little bit of the culture. And actually, I worked for Mr. Meester, Selwyn Meester. Did that ring a bell?
No.
I think he's he was of the Gold Olympian New Zealand team in the 60s. So he made a lot of jokes about you guys.
Yeah, I bet. We love him, really. But
nah, we do love him. Bless him. All right, well, Jay, we're going to wrap it up there, and thank you once again for joining us today here on The Reverse Stick. Best of wishes with the foundation, and we'll keep an eye out for all of the projects that are coming up and do our best to share them out to the hockey world.
Yeah, great. No, we love organizations like this that want to help and support and spread the word. You know, it's cool. And maybe we'll see each other one day somewhere around the world.
Maybe a cool beverage is a good idea.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay.
That would be very nice. All right, guys. Stay in touch.
Cheers. All the best.